On this Congress, we have a few workshops and panel discussions on all the laws that came in the name of anti-terrorism. For Emmanuel Goldstein from 2600, sitting next to me here, lives not only in New York, but also they make a weekly radio show, which is nearby the financial district, or it's within the financial district. So I thought it's a good idea to let him tell us a little bit how it is if you don't watch TV and see planes crashing into towers, but if you're a few buildings next to it, and what all this police state meanwhile you live in feels like.
Well, there are different levels to it all. On how many of you listen to the radio program we do? Off the hook. Okay, that's a cool number. We're basically at a radio station called WBAI, which is a whole story unto itself. It's about maybe half a mile away from where the World Trade Center used to be. So obviously we were affected pretty heavily by the events of September 11th. Our station went off the air when I think number 7 World Trade Center collapsed, because that took our phones with it and our power. And since then, though, on that first day, obviously things were just crazy, and everybody was sort of in shock, especially down in that neighborhood. That kind of changed over the months, weeks and months, to a very ill-advised turn of events, where basically all kinds of laws have been passed without public debate. Things have moved very quickly in directions that we never would have moved otherwise. And computer hackers, the hacker community, has been targeted as never before, as if we were the same type of people that crash planes into buildings. It's a very disturbing turn of events, because you realize that they had this pretty much ready to go. They were waiting for a crisis of some sort to say, okay, now let's pass these laws against all of these people and make it a terrorist offense for somebody to hack a web page someplace. And all of a sudden you have a lot of people living in fear, and you have a lot of people being equated with terrorists who are simply mischievous kids. So we're not living in a very good time right now. It was bad enough before. We had the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. You all know what that is? The DMC, okay. Yeah, that's an ingenious little piece of law that came out of the United States that basically makes it illegal to do such things as, well, as we found out, publish source code for certain computer programs, or try to figure out a way to make technology work in a way that the people who own the device or the software don't want you to. In particular, the case of the ECSS, a program written by some people in Scandinavia and Germany too, I believe, that basically allowed Linux machines to play DVDs. I mean, that's a crime of the century, but to the average person, they don't know what the hell that means. They don't know what a Linux machine is. They know what a DVD is, but to them, it sounds as if, you know, people just want to rip off Hollywood and destroy Western civilization and all that kind of crap. And it's really hard to battle this. It really is. All we did back in November of 1999 was publish a link to the source code. And the reason we did that was because we heard that the Motion Picture Association of America, an organization we knew very little about except for the fact that they seem to watch all the movies and tell us what kind of movies they are, if it's suitable for children or not, they were going around threatening people who actually had this on their website. And we thought, hey, that's horrible. They can't do that. Well, they did, and they continued to do that. And as soon as we linked to the people as a show of solidarity, all of a sudden we were the threat. We were the big threat against Western civilization, and we were stunned. We were absolutely flabbergasted by this, that, wait, just because we have a link to a computer program that you can use to watch DVDs on a Linux player, we're destroying Hollywood by doing that? That's pretty amazing. So they took us to court. They sued us. And we lost the lawsuit, and recently we lost the appeal as well, which basically prevents us from having on the site, on our website, the ECSS, the source code, the executable, anything. It also prevents us from linking to the other sites that have it. It does not, as of yet, and this is something that we continue to test them with, it does not keep us from listing the websites, not linking to them. So we're going to see if they tell us not to list them as well. And as we've said before, if they tell us not to list them, then we'll simply speak them as a conversation. And if they tell us we're not allowed to even think about it, okay, at least we know we're not allowed to think about this anymore. So the DMCA is alive and well, unfortunately. It's being upheld by courts. Now, we're going to try to take this to the Supreme Court. They have the option of hearing it or not hearing it. If they do hear it, then hopefully they'll see that it's a disgusting piece of legislation that should not have ever seen the light of day. If, however, they choose not to hear it, or if they agree with it, then we have some very dark days ahead. We'll have more Dimitri cases. We'll have people going to prison for writing computer programs or for trying to figure out ways to bypass copyright protection, as they put it. It's virtually unlimited the kinds of things that they can do, and there will be many, many cases where the DMCA will be challenged. The last issue we put out of 2600, the autumn issue, so many of our articles, when we looked over the titles, we looked over the subject matter, we realized every single one of these is a violation of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, because we're telling people how to get around security, how to bypass things, how to use technology in ways that the owners did not intend for you to use. So the day is coming very rapidly when in the United States our publication will no longer be legal. We'll have a situation where we are the DMCA violation, and that's when we'll have to go somewhere else and publish from there.
Yeah, but Europe will not be that place where you go, because we have the European Copyright Directive, which will be discussed on this Congress. It has to be implemented in Germany at the beginning of next year, and it at least makes it illegally to spread information devices, all kinds of stuff that enable to put copyright protection mechanisms away, where this copyright protection mechanism is not specified. So this means in the real world right now, we have special laws balancing the interests of commercial users, of the holders of the rights, and the public, like libraries and all that kind of stuff. And after this law passed, we will have only a technical protection that, or a technical way, the MPAA, whoever thinks of is good, that will allow or not allow the access, and it will be simply illegal to put these mechanisms away to go around them. So also the region code in D4D, for example, which is not based on any kinds of law. It's just a technical mechanism for making marketing. Splitting marketing
into
special
economic
areas.
Purely economic.
Yeah, will make it illegal. But Emmanuel, let me ask you one question. For I was in November, I was in Los Angeles at the ICANN meeting, and for I was jet lagged, I was sitting in the television set at 5 o'clock in the morning, and with my computer here and CNN there, and I more or less live saw this plane crash, this last plane crash in New York, mm-hmm. Going down in what was it? Not Brooklyn, it was
Manhattan
yeah. Somewhere. and I was just, you know, there was like 30 minutes, there was only blah, blah. There was kind of a police here, a fire engine there, blah, 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 no information. And then the Minister for Defense, not the police, not the airport authorities, not someone from any line, anybody involved with airlines, no, the Minister for Defense, Mr. Rumsfeld, mm-hmm. came on the screen saying, oh, this was an accident. And I thought, did the responsibilities in this country change now the way that the Minister for Defense makes the public announcement about accidents? So is this the way it goes now?
Wait, he said the plane crashing into the World Trade Center was
No.
Oh, the other plane crash, the one in Queens. Oh, okay.
Yeah, November right. This year.
Yeah, I thought that
Queen,
was kind of
Queen. It was Queens stuff.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of unusual myself. They seemed to be very, very quick to say, "Oh yeah, that wasn't terrorism. That was an accident." You know, planes just plunge into neighborhoods in Queens all the time. I thought it was very unusual too, because if you recall TWA Flight 800, you've all heard of that, okay? That was an accident, and how much attention have we focused on that? All right. Does anybody even remember the flight number of the plane that crashed? a month ago in Queens, nobody remembers. You know, it's like, that's weird. You know, we seem, for some reason, have not cared about that one. I don't know.
But is it all the way now that the Minister for Defense took over the public announcement for any kinds of accidents happening? Or is there, I mean, I saw lots of people waving flags.
Yeah.
And
it's not the same country it was 6 months ago.
No.
And we knew that. We knew that was going to happen as soon as we saw the events happening in September.
And other people agree with the government passing all kinds of law and say, oh, yes, we need to fight that terrorist?
When people are scared, they agree with whoever talks with the firm voice and, it seems to be the father figure that will get you through the crisis. And, yes, if you look at CNN polls, these are the scariest polls in the world, you look at things and they say, do you think that torture should be used as a method to get information from people? Yes, I do agree if it makes things safer, you know, or will you give up your right to free speech if it makes your life more secure? Yes, right away I will give up my right to free. And I don't know if they're staging these things or if there are that many stupid people out there, but overwhelmingly people seem to be embracing these kinds of things. And yeah, it's pretty frightening. You know, to an extent, I can understand when people are afraid. I can understand the flag waving. It's a natural reaction. But now we've had some time to think about it, and I think people are starting to be a little bit, thinking about the future and what are we really doing. I mean, they passed the USA Patriot Act less than a month after it all happened, and you know, there's not a single congressman in the United States that actually read the act that they passed. There's no way they could have because it's so complicated and it makes reference to so many other laws that you'd need a team of people working around the clock to actually read the whole thing and read nuances into it. But we've seen quotes from congressmen saying, I don't know what's in this law. I really don't. And yet they passed it. So, yeah, we'll be finding out in the months, years ahead just what it is that we're in for.
And what's your way of handling all this? Are you already looking for a place to stay to change the country, or are you looking for other kinds of people to get into your country to use their mind? Or what's your idea on handling this?
It's gotten to the point where it's kind of like a film that you're watching where you realize it's a bad film. But you just kind of want to see how bad it gets, you know? So you don't leave the theater. You stay in the theater and you just keep watching and saying, oh, this really sucks. And and so we're kind of at that stage now where we're just kind of like sitting back in disbelief watching and saying, oh, my God, I mean, now there's going to be tanks on every corner and they're going to arrest us for looking crooked at them. Mm-hmm. So, boy, that's kind of weird. And, you know, we have a good support network. We have a lot of people that sit around with us and kind of, you know, worry about the future, but it hasn't gotten to the point yet where we feel, afraid to even be around. I'm of the firm belief, you know, a lot of people suggest to me, well, why don't you just get out of here? But, you know, if you don't like this country, you know, just go someplace else. I'm of the firm belief that the best way is to stay and to fight and to, put yourself on the line if necessary, but just not run away. And I think that's what's changed societies in many countries over the years. People staying and fighting for what they believe in. So hopefully a lot of people will do that. Hopefully people will wake up in the future.
But let me ask you one more question about this, because, I mean, you've been doing your work in consciousness and showing up technology issues for a lot of time, for a long time. And, I mean, these laws that came now, most of them were not, for us here, a big surprise. It has been laws that have been discussed more or less before, that they were so unrealistic that it was not, you know, that they were not to pass. So do you think that this jihad situation, or however we call it, this airplane crash, really changed something? Or was it just, if I compare it with your sitting in a theater, was it just pushing the forward button?
Fast
forward, maybe.
As far as the people, as far as the people behind the legislation and all that kind of thing, yeah. To me, it's a very shameful type of a thing, because it seemed to me like as soon as those planes hit the buildings, they said, okay, that's our cue, let's go, let's move ahead with what we want. And it was all ready to go, it was all packaged, all the things that we had already rejected as far as making encryption more difficult or making laws of detention a lot more liberal. Those kinds of things, all of a sudden they brought back and they said, okay, well, now we have a reason to have these controls. Now we really have to wiretap people, you know, in a much broader sense, because we have this threat. And no thought was put into it. They basically were just waiting for something to happen, and then when something happened, they said, okay, let's go ahead with this. I see that as using a tragic event, you know, to further one's own goals. And that's something that I think if anybody else was doing that, we would roundly condemn. Basically, you know, if somebody uses a tragedy like this to sell a product, we'd say that's horrible. Well, that's exactly what the U.S. government is doing. They're using this tragedy to sell their product, which is all kinds of laws like DMCA, all kinds of restrictive access and fear of technology and fear of computer hackers and all kinds of other people that have an awareness of what's going on. So, yeah, it's something that I think they were thinking of doing somehow. They just needed a crisis, and now they have one.
So if I take your wording of selling a product, then it might be that some of the American citizens are already fed up with that product, so that's why the U.S. government tries to export that laws. We have here maybe one issue for this panel, the Cybercrime Convention, which came out of a G8 so-called high-tech crime meeting. So G8 is including Russia and all that countries, all the industrialized big countries. Meanwhile, the Council of Europe passed this Cybercrime Convention, which makes it not only illegal to distribute attacking tools, like a virus is then forbidden to spread. So we've been making some research. We didn't find any computer virus that cared about laws, but maybe if things go on, we'll find some. We have some interesting ways of that American companies can sue us now for here within Europe if they say that we violated their copyright laws. So copyright is a part of so-called cybercrime now. And Sebastian is a little bit more in the details of the Cybercrime Convention, which is by now it's only they agreed to it, which means it has to be implemented in all national legislation. It is not by now. Some parts of it have been, let's say, put a little less in the meaning of some of the laws where European countries then protested that, for example, crypto regulation should not be in that. They have made it, oh, you can, you don't have to law. So this means if the next denial of service attack comes created by the NSA, by the NIPC, or by all that kind of guy that need more budget, or if they don't have it right now, it might be that the one or the other European country has to say, oh, no, we can't do this or that to fight this because we have not implemented all of this law. And then the other European countries will say, oh, yeah, do so, and then we will have all the shit. So, Sebastian, maybe you can get a little bit on the details on this and how this will affect us.
You said the distribution of programs to check computer security is not forbidden. It's not only the distribution, it's also the possession. And because there was much criticism about that, they put this nice sentence in there. The possession of an item, such as a computer program, is not allowed with the intent that it be used for the purpose of committing any of the offenses established in the Articles 2 to 5. So that's a very interesting point. How do they want to find out if somebody has the intent to use something against something? So actually it's a useless sentence. So every system administrator will be in trouble if he uses security tools, if this really gets implemented, which looks like that. So the Cybercrime Convention was in the beginning more or less developed in secret. I think the some 22nd or something, the 22nd version of it, something like that, was the first one that was publicly available. And then we could read it, and it looked terrible. In the meantime, many changes have been done, such as change must clauses for can clauses, but that doesn't really help us, because most of the countries probably will implement it. The Cybercrime Convention is already being signed. It was started, the process for signature was started on November 23rd. And I can read the countries that already signed it. It's Albania, Armenia, Austria, Belgium, Bulgaria, Croatia, Cyprus, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Iceland, Italy, Moldova, Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, Ukraine, United Kingdom, and also Canada, Japan, South Africa, and the United States. So there's already wide support around the world. The signature is not yet a ratification. That's the next step. The Cybercrime Convention will come into force when 5 countries have ratified it, and at least 3 of them have to be member states of the Council of Europe. That's another important point. Sometimes you read in newspapers something about European Union, but this has nothing to do with the European Union. They also do their own stuff. For example, they right now trying to implement data retention. But this is done by the Council of Europe, where everybody knows probably the Convention for Human Rights, Protection of Human Rights, that was done by them, which also means that many more countries can participate. It has nothing to do with Europe. We also prepared an information website. It is www.ccc.de/cybercrime. It's slightly out of date, but I will update it today and tomorrow so that it will reflect the latest developments. Quick about what the Cybercrime Convention contains. It is basically has 4 chapters. First chapter is definition of terms. Second chapter is measures to be taken at the national level. And that's where they define certain crimes that should be punished everywhere in the world. And guess which ones they are. They are, of course, computer-related crimes such as hacking and forgery, but also content-related offenses. This is the child pornography, and the third one is copyright. So it looks like they try to get the companies on their side. Interestingly, if you read the summary of the convention, the infringements of copyright are even named first, so before everything else. Especially Germany and other countries would have liked something against Nazi or other radical web pages in there. It's not in there, but there will be an additional protocol or addendum to it, and then there might also be something that punishes different expressions on websites that are considered not correct by certain governments.
So looks like we're in a global jihad on copyright, on intellectual property.
But one of the amazing things is that the United States is actually pushing legislation, I don't know how they're going to work this one, where they can extradite people in other countries. So if you think that just because you're in a different country and you do something that we don't like, you're safe. No, we can actually arrange with your government to come and get you, give you a free trip to the United States where you can go on trial in one of our courtrooms and go to one of our nice clean prisons. That's the future. Now, of course, it doesn't work the other way. We can't be sent to Iran or something for violating one of their laws. But
Emmanuel, did you know that Islam does not recognize copyright? It's a crime to take a charge if you copy something, because it limits the distribution of culture, is their argumentation. Did you know that?
That's interesting. Sounds like something Thomas Jefferson might have said, too.
Yeah, but, I mean, okay, that could be other reasons.
It's universal wisdom.
Yeah,
but the other part is also they try to implement something like real-time collection of computer data. So if, for example, United States think that you might have hacked a computer there, they can make a request at the German government. We would like all content data from your internet connection and all connection data. Please send it over there, and Germany would have to comply with that. And the most interesting or maybe worst thing is that something that is maybe punishable in the United States but not in Germany doesn't help. They can still request the data to be sent to the United States or maybe South Africa or maybe a country like Nigeria joins, who knows, then Nigeria can request. So, for example...
The other problem is, of course, our overwhelming control of the net. I don't know if you saw this story a few weeks ago, but it was just one of these tiny stories on CNN that the United States turned off Somalia's internet access. We didn't like something they were doing, so we just turned off their access, and they weren't on the net. And I don't know how many people in Somalia actually use the internet, but the fact that we can go out there and simply turn off internet access for a different country, I don't know, I thought that was a little bit disturbing. And you have to wonder, you know, how much control do other countries have over their own access to the internet?
Okay, so maybe we have one more thing I'd like to ask you, and that is, in the American media, how much was it said or how much was related to... We heard that Carnivore, for example, was very quickly installed at some ISPs there, that also you don't have crypto regulation, but the FBI requested from all companies who sell crypto products to report suspicious customers, whatever that is. Maybe people with a black hat like this here or stuff like that. So was there any internet-related hysteria also in the media? Because, I mean, after all what we heard, the terrorists didn't use internet, but at least not for...
That's the odd thing, because all of these new rules, regulations, legislation, they're all based on things such as, how do we prevent these people from communicating with each other? Well, you know, they can communicate in all kinds of different ways. They can use regular telephones. They can use the mail, which generally we don't open up U.S. mail and read what people are saying. So I don't think communication is really that much of a problem, but they're making it as if this whole thing was planned on the internet and could have easily been stopped if they had simply monitored some communications. And none of that is true. None of this could have been stopped by monitoring communications, so it's completely irrelevant. You have things like Carnivore and Magic Lantern and all kinds of stuff like that being surreptitiously installed and passed, and there's not much attention paid to it in the mass media. Occasionally you hear somebody saying, yes, the FBI was here at my ISP and they requested all kinds of records and information, but you never find out what it was all about. They're just quietly investigating things.
And was the public attention to this anthrax coming from U.S. weapon laboratories the same?
No, I saw that story only once, too. but basically, I think it was a congressman said that it was obvious that this anthrax was coming from a U.S. Military installation. And that story didn't exist after a day. The fact that it's almost undoubtedly coming from the United States, coming from a solitary person, that's one of the reasons why you never hear anything about this anymore as a terrorist act. It's just as much a terrorist act, I think, as crashing planes into buildings. It's a way of basically being afraid to open the mail. That's a terrorist act, and it's coming from the United States. Who are we going to bomb now? I mean, had all of this happened domestically, you have to wonder what if on September 11th it was 19 Timothy McVeighs that crashed airplanes into buildings? You know, would we be bombing Michigan? Would we be going after the white supremacist movement? It's the whole thing seems like an excuse just to dominate the world theater and push our agenda onto all different nations and onto our own people. It's working splendidly right now. And my only hope is that eventually more and more people will wake up and see that this is not to their advantage.
Okay, we'll do have some panel here about the end of truth and on media reality. And maybe Sebastian can report at the end a little bit because he's working in one of the universities where some of this suspected terrorist bombers have been studying. And he had some interesting experience with United States police coming and European police coming and German police coming and all those nice people sitting in your office or...
No, not
directly?
No, I didn't have directly anything to do with it. Of course, after September 11th, when they found out that the pilots came from my university, they sent police there, obviously, and investigators. And it's kind of a difficult situation because everybody thinks about privacy and we shouldn't give out any data. But the concern in the first days was that there might be another terrorist act planned. And maybe if we search fast for all the data, then we might be able to find out about that in time and stop it from happening. So the concern in the first hours after the attack wasn't one of privacy, more of one that we stop any other terrorist attacks. So it has been a broad discussion also with the Rasterfahndung in Germany right now, if the universities should give out data or not. My university was very uncritical in this matter because the fear was that there actually might be more terrorists at the university. Hasn't turned out that way, but they were working and looking for stored data on the computer system, of course. And
they took the backups from how many years?
Well, all they had.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, though. I mean, just to explain what happened is that normally that university were not allowed to store this data longer than a special period of time than the German data protection laws allowed, but the police simply took all what they could get, of course, and that was about 10 years.
Yeah, I don't know about the details.
Okay. Of course not.
No, I just know more about the technical problems because that was the first time we tried to restore this amount of data going that far back, and it didn't work. So I don't want to tell the company's name, but they sent technicians to help, and they couldn't figure it out either.
Okay. And maybe there's some questions from you. I saw a hand there. I don't know if we have someone with a microphone. Yes.
Wait for the person to get to you.
Ich würde darum bitten, dass das übersetzt wird. Ich kann das nicht in Englisch erzählen.
So.
Und zwar, also wenn ich das richtig verstanden habe, ging es eben darum, was an der TU Harburg stattgefunden hat. Und da waren 40 vom FBI 2 Wochen lang einquartiert, die dann alles, aber auch wirklich alles ausgecheckt haben, was da am Computer rumsteht, was da drauf ist und halt. Und die haben mit der Hilfe von der Bundesanwaltschaft und dem BKA und dem Verfassungsschutz zusammen da eben halt 2 Wochen lang gewühlt. Also das ist konkret passiert.
Ist das jetzt eine Frage oder eine Feststellung? Achso, ja. Okay, yeah, I don't know the details, but just to summarize what he said that 2 weeks long there was FBI and German police, and they collected data from everything, basically everything they could find. Yeah. Is that correct? Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I was trying to say, that. Of course, in such a situation, privacy loses. But on the other hand, maybe it's really hard. I mean, imagine you're in a situation like that. You are a system administrator there, and police comes and wants data because terrorists came from the university. What are you going to do? It's a really tough question.
Okay. I guess we all do have time to get, if no, there's no more questions. Yes. Oh, there is. One there.
One here and one over there.
Sollte an sein.
Is on? Yeah. Okay. I'm a student of a university in Würzburg, and I know something about the Rasterfahndung, what is planned for the future. All foreign students in Germany at all universities and upper high schools, they have to send the data of the foreign students to the LKA and BKA, and this is planned for the next 10 years. They came to our university too. They wanted to have the data. They wanted to have merged data from different offices, but we didn't have the manpower to do that, and so they went away. They didn't get anything till now, but they want to come back with the people who do have to do that.
But when you say foreign students, does that include American students?
All.
Okay.
All foreign students.
Interesting.
They did get some data, something about 4 or 5 days after the 11th September.
What they're doing in the United States and in the Midwest is they're interviewing all of these Middle Eastern men, which somehow they already know where they all are, and they're asking them voluntarily to come in and speak to the FBI. And if they don't want to do that, that's okay. But what they're doing is they're making a list of the people who don't talk to them. And the people who do talk to them, it's a ridiculously simple thing where they basically just say, oh, so how you doing, you know. They basically chat for like an hour, and then they're listed as cooperative people. And then the people who don't come in are listed as uncooperative people, and then they look at them a little bit more closely. So that's the method of investigation that's currently going on. It's a real genius operation. Basically, you know, what we don't seem to get is that true security is always going to be completely elusive. I don't know how many of you heard about the shoe incident that just took place in American Airlines. Well, now, guess what? They're going to search everyone's shoes. You know, like, gee whiz, they never thought that, hey, maybe somebody could hide something in their shoe before. So they're obviously not real. They're going through the motions. They're trying to make it seem as if, you know, we're on top of the situation, but there's no way they could ever cover everything. They could certainly do a better job, security-wise, without, you know, infringing on people's rights, but they're never going to 100% cover everything.
I wanted to say something additional about the extradition process, because it's not mandatory. They have a cop-out to make government sign the treaty, and it basically says if it's a matter of sovereignty, then states can refuse to extradite people. So this is actually, if some politician is involved or something, they can say no. But it would technically give governments the possibility not to extradite anything or not to give any stored data to other governments. But we shall see. So the technical possibility is there. And I think they put it in there to make more governments agree. But it's not that Germans would have to give away their citizens to the U.S. if the MPAA says, oh, that guy traded MP3s. And basically the U.S. have to extradite people too, so they sign it, so it's not that the U.S. is exempt from that paragraph, but I would say, judging from history, the U.S. would always say it's a matter of sovereignty and refuse.
Any other questions?
Otherwise, maybe we're going to close this little... Or is there?
If you're in the back, you kind of have to jump up and down because we can't really see you.
Okay.
All right.
It has been reported in the media that the computer equipment of the BKA is so old-fashioned that they don't have any spare parts. It's deep down from the 70s where they played a lot of bit with Rastafandung. So we have perhaps a little bit more time. The situation in the LKA is much better. They have better computers, but they can't pass the data to the BKA to give it to someone else because they have so old-fashioned, I guess it's a BSC 3000 from Siemens. And nobody can support it, even the manufacturer. So I guess now, if beginning of the next year, we all smoke to get better computer equipment, even for the BKA.
Okay, I'm not sure that's our job, but I mean, what I can report is, the other day was at a computer security conference, and there were some bankers coming to me telling me that they have been running BS 2000 machines for 20 years now, and that must be secure computers at least against hackers, because which hacker would be so masochistic and get into the trouble of a BS 2000 just operating it? It's a pain. I'm not sure that's adequate definition of computer security, but okay. Maybe we just close down this little discussion now, we'll get further into this issue during the conference. This was just to maybe have a little report on this.
It's just something people should always be thinking about, and we certainly want to hear your feedback as far as how we should face this, because this is a really serious threat. It doesn't just affect computer hackers, it affects you know, everyday citizens. They just don't know it yet. They don't see the danger. And they will, and by the time they do, it might be too late. So we're kind of at the forefront.
Emil, let me ask you this. Do you see any chance for any kind of event that the same speed that these laws were made now, that they would also be taken away again?
Well, I see if people can see exactly what's going on. For instance, in the United States right now, we have over 1,000 people who have been detained since September, because they have minor violations with their passport. They might have stayed too long, or they might not have filled out a form properly, and they're also Middle Eastern. The American public is aware of this, but they don't care because they're not being told the details. We don't know who they are. We don't know where these people are. We're just told that there are over 1,000 people being detained. I think once people start putting a human picture to it, once they start seeing that, hey, families are suffering, people are actually being affected by this, innocent people, and it's because of government misbehavior, they're going to say, wait a minute, this is not right. This is not the way it should be. But until they see that connection, until they realize that, hey, this is not something that's necessary for us to remain secure, this is abuse. Once they see that, they'll start to react. So the American public is more intelligent than the media gives them credit for. The unfortunate reality is that the media is so completely entrenched into our society that we have no alternatives. We don't have a way of finding out information other than what we are force-fed. Once people start providing alternative means, and I think that's something that we can help do here through things like indie media and various other forms of getting the word out, once people are able to rely on that information, they'll start to realize that what they're seeing on TV every day isn't necessarily the truth. They'll start to question. They'll start to think of alternatives, and that's where the hope comes in.
Okay. Right. I guess that's a good plan to do. Let's get to work, and there's... to mind the gap, there's going to be a practical report on using crypto file systems in this room at 12 o'clock. That's in about 15 minutes, or 10 minutes.
Thank you.